Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. My guest today is a Franco-American. She also works for My Little Paris, and she recently wrote a book called It's Never Too Late to Bloom. The book chronicles finding your passions later in life. Please welcome to the show, Catherine Tarre. Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. If you want more bonus material and to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/LaVieCreative. And also don't forget to check out Amazon, where you can pick up my new book, Paris, A Life Less Ordinary. In the book, I talk about my creative adventures in Paris, from starting my business to being homeless, hello, starving artist, to how I met all these wonderful creative people. Don't forget to check it out on Amazon. And also thank you so much once more for listening and for your support. Enjoy the show. So welcome to the show, Catherine. I am very happy to finally chat with you. We have a mutual friend, Anne Dittmeyer, who is also on the show. And she just told me I needed to chat with you. So thank you for talking to me today.
Thank you. Bonjour, Christelle. I'm very happy to be on your show. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, we were talking about before how you were like, oh, I never speak in English anymore, even though you are Franco-American, you live in Paris, you work in French, and you're like, oh, no, I had to speak in English for this podcast. But I just want to reassure you right now, your English is wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Well, with the lockdown, I haven't been able to travel, of course, like everybody else. So I've been staying in France for a year. I haven't moved from France in the last year. So yeah, I don't speak a lot of English here.
Oh, gosh, it has been a year since you traveled. That should be illegal.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
Have you at least been traveling around France a little bit?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. I went to Corsica and to Normandy and yeah.
Oh, gosh, Corsica's beautiful. I haven't been yet, but I'm dying to go. So Corsica is not even France. We don't count that as France.
Yeah, we do.
They're like their own country. They're like Sicily and Italy. It's another country, let's be fair.
But we like it. We like it. So we want to have it in France.
Oh, I want to talk a little bit about your new book, It's Never Too Late to Bloom. And this book was originally written in French, and now it's coming out in English. And it's such an interesting subject. And we talked a little bit about this before, about how in French culture, you know, you kind of start your path, you go to your fancy schools, and that's the path you stay on. But for you, you know, you started that way. And then one day you woke up and you're like, wait a minute, this is not working for me. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, sure. So in France, we need to choose our path in life. I mean, we are asked to choose our path in life quite early on. When we are in school, around, you know, 14 or 15, we have to choose our main topics, our main subjects. And then we start, you know, we go to school, we go to university, and we get an education, we graduate, and we start a job. And it's very difficult to change your path. You know, if you want to, for example, if you're a doctor and you want to become a baker, it's very difficult socially, you know, and not easily accepted. And you know, just the country doesn't make it easy for you. Mm-hmm. People are not used to the idea of just simply reinventing yourself, either because you need to, you know, you have you lose your job, or for whatever reason you need to move and you need to find something new to do, or because you just have this new desire to do something else, you know, and that's something that's quite, it's a new idea in France. It's a very new idea. So that's why the concept of late blooming was so, you know, surprising to many people when I started talking about it. And it was also very reassuring, I think, for a lot of people to understand that, you know, there are a lot of other places where you can, you know, you can change the course of your life, and that's okay. You know, it's really fun, and it can be very positive. And so, yeah, it's a big cultural difference.
Yeah, definitely. And how did you find the courage to do that? I mean, you do have a mix of cultures, obviously, but, you know, growing up in France, how did you find your bravery to do that?
Well, for me, it was more like survival, because this, you know, this path, this highway, you know, I was a very good student in school. So I never asked myself any question. I just went, you know, the easy way for me was just to, you know, go to, you know, good schools and just get an education. And I worked hard, of course, but, and then I started working in marketing, and I was working in Unilever in ice cream. Mm-hmm. That was mm-hmm. a great period for me. 7 years in ice cream, eating ice cream every day. That was cool.
Oh, that sounds so dreamy.
But at one point, something clicked in me, I think. And I in my book, I call it my omelet brain period. my brain felt like it was completely like mushy, like an omelet. Direction. I was like, what am I doing here? You know, I was eating that ice cream in Rue de la Maison in Unilever. I was like, ooh, is this really what I want to keep doing? And I, of course, I had never, you know, thought about anything else, but I just felt that I was not quite where I should be. You know, it was really early on, because I was 28 or 29.
Yeah.
So that's a big, that's an early stage for a life crisis or a midlife crisis.
Yeah.
So I was lost, and none of my friends had gone through that. But I felt bad. I was really a little depressed at that time, because I felt blocked. I was like, okay, if I'm not going to be doing that, what am I going to be doing? And at the same time, I also, I didn't feel good in the relationship I was in. So that too was not going well. I mean, this omelet brain thing was really in my life. So it was, that's why I say, I mean, it's provocative, of course, but it was kind of a survival. I needed to step out of this bad stage that I was at, and just move forward. So I quit my job. I quit my boyfriend. Can you say that in English? No, I quit.
Yeah, we say you left him, but I like how the French people say I quit.
That's why
I like that better.
So in doing that, I had no plan. Maybe it's my personality, because I have a hard time planning ahead. Mm-hmm. But I was left with, okay, now I need to find a new job. Now, like now, what am I going to do? And I had no choice. And so that was actually great, because I didn't go through the whole, you know, I need to stay on my path, because if I don't stay on my path, maybe, you know, I won't be as successful as I should be, blah, blah, blah. I didn't even go through that, all that thing, that stuff. I just found a new job freelancing and writing, because I really liked writing, and it was, you know, a good skill for me. And then I told myself, okay, now if anyone offers you to do something, like offers a mission or a job, you just take it, even if you just, you know, you just do it, you know. And so totally shifted my mindset, and I started freelancing and doing a lot of interesting things, different things that I had never done before, and experimenting, basically.
I love this, because just like you said, so many, I mean, you went to one of the two top schools in Paris, basically. You had your career set, you had your man, everybody around you was comfortable, and you're like the weirdo who's not comfortable with what would be like kind of a perfect life, where you're a big company and everything's set up, and you were just like, I'm just gonna, you know, go the opposite way. And I think there's so many people who want to do that, but we do get stuck in our heads and we say, but what if I, you know, I can't work my way back up, or I can't make that money, or I'll never meet another man. You didn't have those moments. You were just kind of like, nope, it's just gonna, this, we're gonna go this way, and whatever happens, happens.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, many years later, because now I'm 45, so this happened like 15 years ago. So I've had a path since that decision. I've had time to reflect on what happened really in my mind and what happened mm-hmm. in my life. And I think that probably I was, you know how you decide that, you don't even decide, you know that in life there are certain things that, you know, you should do, like, mm-hmm. you know, study, meet someone, get married, have kids, buy an apartment or a house, blah, blah, blah. These like standard things that most people do, you know, every mm-hmm. And in France we call it cocher des cases, means okay, that's done. And so that's a way, like a basic way to progress in your life. You know, it's just, doing what you think you need to do. And the other way is following your values, something deeper, you know, something that's really you, that's very personal, intimate. And I think that I had no clue whatsoever that I even had any values or whatever. I just, went with the flow. And I think at that moment when I was 21, what my interpretation of what happened is that suddenly the decisions that I had made and the choices that I had made previously were too far away from my values. And I couldn't understand it, because of course I didn't have, I didn't have this perspective, but now that's how I would explain it.
Probably. I like that a lot. And how did you discover your values? Like, now you know your values better, but that only come with age and experience? Or do you think people can sit down and kind of figure that out sooner than later?
I definitely think, Crystal, that we should be thinking much more about our values. I mean, when I say values, I mean really something that's very personal and deep mm-hmm. and intimate. You can have, I believe you can have different values from your friends or from your family, which are very, related to your personality, to your sensitivity, to your mission in life. I mean, and I think that this is something that we can really learn to think about realize in a much more positive way. You don't need to wait until the crisis to know what your values are. And I think probably a good way is to know, to identify, I mean, the moments in your life when you feel, energized, you feel mm-hmm. right, you feel it's good, whatever you're doing, you know. Now I really take the time to really note, oh wow, this happened and I felt really good, mm-hmm. what was happening at that moment. Maybe it was that person I was talking to, or maybe it was that, thing I was writing about, or maybe it was, I don't know, but something felt good, about it, and that's probably, really good. And that's probably related to a value that I have, or something that, is very deep and very strong in me. And with time you start to understand yourself in that matter, I think. So it's a lot about observing and experimenting, actually, I think.
I think that's such great advice, because, it seems like something we should just know, like, think about your feelings. But I think we all ignore that way too often. And then you get into that rut, like you were talking about, you're like, wait, just sitting there eating ice cream, looking at your green wall, being like, I'm not happy. So going back to talking about values and, what ignites light in you, do you think creativity, is a big part of defining your values? Do you think creativity is inherently connected with what our values are?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely. I think that for me, creativity is really, it's vitality. So for me, when you want to create, when you feel like you need to create something or start something, it tells a lot about your vitality, I think. You're wanting to have a more intense life, to change your life, to put some movement in your life. So for me, creativity is really something that is very intimate. I think everybody is creative, of course. And I believe that the best work you do, related to your, closely relating to your values. Mm-hmm. Are. I mean, the most authentic work that we can produce is, of course, you know, so it comes from somewhere very deep inside ourselves.
Do you think that your creative voice is coming from your brain or from this like deep side of ourselves, you know, because you've been reading all these books about like your brain and then like meditation and reaching these other, you know, parts of yourself. Where do you think creativity comes from?
I have no idea.
There's all these talks about like the creative spirit and creative energy. And what do you think?
I know. You know what? I think that it's probably a mix of a lot of things because I think we all feel that when we move, when we walk, when we're, you know, swimming, when we're, you know, moving our body, we have ideas. Mm-hmm. I think there's like the physical element. And I also think that the brain has something to do with it because, you know, if you do the morning pages that I'm sure you know of, or, you know, some journaling, or, you know, if you have some creative routine in your life, that's more, I think, mental. That's more the brain. Mm-hmm. Then I think where the ideas come from. When I was writing my book, I was super surprised because I had been, you know, working on the ideas. I had been, you know, taking a lot of notes and trying to, you know, find some links between the stories and everything. And the writing was not really good, actually. And then at some point, I don't know why, it just started pouring out, and it was like a flow, and it was really much, much nicer than what I feel I could have written myself. I mean, I was writing, but I felt like somebody else was writing.
I like that.
And so I think it's really a mix of, you know, something maybe spiritual or mystical, but the brain, the mind, and the body are very linked. I could not imagine doing a creative project only sitting at my desk. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's possible for me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I need to walk. I need to, you know, just move my body. And I feel that it moves, it gets the, you know, the flows of creativity really moving. So it's it's a group thing of these parts of yourself at work. I think
it's a team collaboration between mind and body.
Teamwork.
Teamwork. I like it. And why do you think creatives are attracted to Paris?
To Paris, you know, I think that, I don't know if it's France or Paris. I think, as I said, before, French people, especially Parisians, but are, have a very, you know, they are full of a lot of things, you know, they're really annoying, but they are really full of life, you know, mm-hmm. like to eat, to drink, to read, they like art, they like, you know, they enjoy life, you know, mm-hmm. and as I was saying before, for me, creativity is about, you know, is life, you know, is vitality. It's really, and so I think that when you come to France, and Paris is a intense version of the country, I would say, like the you get into that energy of, you know, of being full of life and all its, you know, its ups and downs and all its stories and all the, you know, the bad stuff and the good stuff. I mean, it's all here, you know, and I'm sure that people get, you know, are sucked into this energy, and it create something within them. I think that's why I really love to live in Paris, because I don't think it's an intense city like maybe New York or Tokyo or this kind of city. It's more smooth in a way, but but I believe that the art of living is what, you know, gets people creative here.
I like that, the art of living. That's a great way to put it. Mm. And do you have advice for people who are searching for their creativity, who maybe think they don't have anything that lights them up? What would you tell those people? How would they better find themselves?
There are a lot of things. I would say observe what comes to you all the time and that you don't notice usually, and something, you know, observe the signs, and the signs are you know, showing you some kind of way. I think that's how I'm always, you know, looking at, you know, if I find a feather in the street, I think, oh, who put that feather here? Oh, wow. Why is it here? What's the sign for me? What should I understand? Or, you know, if somebody calls me and talks to me about a subject and I'm inspired and I'm like, oh, this is strange. Why did this person, you know, call me about this? And what can I do about it? What can I do with it? And so observing, I guess, what happens in the world around, and also, as I said before, inside you, you know, so what brings you energy and what, you know, brings you no energy, takes your energy. These signs are really interesting to get to your to get in touch with your creativity. But I like also our little things, like, you know, in France we are hooked on our resume, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is really like the definition of yourself, you know, and it's, yeah, so limiting, you know. It's really just, you know, a piece of paper, and yeah. I really like it when people share, you know, like fun facts about them, like, you know, what we're talking about earlier, like, oh, I had this encounter with a ghost one day, or
I like that. Like,
so, and these things are what make you, you know, unique. And,
yeah.
And these things are a sign of your creativity as well, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's fun to start with, you know, finding what's really bizarre and odd about you and about what you do, and observing also what comes around you. And that's a good start, I think.
I love that. I think that's great advice. And yeah, I think about what makes you separate from others. That would definitely be the right place to start. And looking for signs, I really like that a lot. But if we look for too many signs, maybe we lose our minds if we try to connect the dots too much.
Yeah, I know. It happens.
That can happen too. And originally you wrote the book in French and then you've translated it to English. Yeah. Did that change anything for you? Like, obviously in two different languages, some things, the meanings changed. Do you feel the book took on different meaning for you in English?
Oh yeah. It was very interesting to translate it, because first of all, I realized that, you know, I love the English language. I've always loved it because my mom is American. So she spoke to me in English when I was small, and I think it's very emotional for me. And I always thought that French was quite kind of boring, you know, compared to English. In English, you can invent words all the time, you know, and it's very flexible language also. And there's a lot of vocabulary, and it's, and so I had this idea in my mind about those two languages. And when I worked on the translation, oh my God, I realized that actually French is very poetic. Yeah, you can express things in French, maybe with more words, but there's a real there's poetry in the language. I don't know how to explain it. And I had a hard time translating some things in English, because my editor would tell me, no, you can't say that in English. I was like, oh, that's so poetic. Let's keep this. This is so nice. And he was like, no way, we're not keeping this in English. For example, when I was describing breaking up with my boyfriend, I was describing a scene where he moved out of our apartment, and I came back to the apartment. It was almost empty, and I just sat on the floor, and you know, I was sad. And the image that came to me was that the air in the apartment, the air was broken like a toy. So in French, you know, it's very nice when you say that. It's very poetic. But when I said to him, you know, the air was broken like a toy, he said, no, that doesn't mean anything. No. To explain what you felt. So it was interesting for me to, I learned a lot about the two languages, and yeah, very interesting. But the core of the topic, I would say, about late blooming was, of course, different because, of course, American people or Anglo-Saxon people know this topic and know this concept very well. So mm-hmm. I don't have to explain this to anybody. For the French people, it was very new. So I had to change a lot of things in the book. But the story is still the same because it's still a story about blooming. So it's pretty much the same. But yeah, I had to tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, no more broken toys in the air.
Exactly.
And where can people buy the book in English? It's Never Too Late to Bloom.
Yeah, they can. Where do you mean where they can buy it?
Where?
Oh, where? On Amazon.
Amazon. Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll add that in the show links. And where can people connect with you online as well? What's some of your social media?
On Instagram or on Facebook? Or on
or your website.
Or my website, of course. Yeah. It's very how do you say, a minimalist.
I like that.
I don't like to define myself. So, but it's there.
Perfect. And your website is just your name, correct?
Yes, justmyname.com.
Okay, perfect. We'll put that all in the show notes. And I was lucky enough to get an advanced copy of the book. So I am so excited to finish it and I'm enjoying it. And, you know, even as an American, we, like you said, we kind of know this reinventing yourself concept. But at the same time, it is scary, you know, because we get in our treadmills, we get in our hamster wheels, and we're afraid that everything's going to fail if we don't stay there. So even as an American reading this story, it's been very inspiring. So thank you for that.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to La Vie Creative. You can find more information on missparisphoto.com. And if you enjoyed this show, please feel free to share and spread the word for all my creative guests. We have the power to help them to keep doing what they love. See you next time.